You're in Open Air with Matt Masters, and this is the Rockin' Rhythm Review. I'll be your host while Jim is away recuperating after losing his voice while winning Ben & Jerry's annual You Scream for Ice Cream, where participants journey to Vermont and summit the peak of Mount Mansfield to scream their favorite flavor, the loudest, into the valley below. Incidentally, Jim took home a year's supply of magic brownie. Was a time-worn sonic struggle whose outcome wasn't always clear. Didn't matter what musicians backed Ella Fitzgerald, she always sold pallets of platters. Elvis would forgo Scotty, Bill, and DJ for his voice, but his music lost its edge. Motown's success was built around the paradigm, dozens of singers, hundreds of hits, one anonymous band. Then there were the Beatles. Any of the four of them could helm the vocals and have a hit. But at present, the music-buying masses have chosen their victor in the epic singer versus band battle, and the singer is victorious. So it's hard to imagine, existing within the province of American Idol, that there was once a popular and successful deviant of rock and rhythm that had no singer at all. On the Rock and Rhythm Review, let's give voice to the all-but-forgotten offshoot of rock and rhythm, instrumentals, a subgenre that produced some of the most diverse and eclectic music in rock and rhythm, a realm of novelty, gimmickry, one-hit wonders, rock legends, studio aces, teenage garage bands, jazz veterans, and the unlikeliest of instruments and sounds. Remarkably, most musicologists agree precisely which song began the prominence of the saxophone in rock and rhythm. Lionel Hampton's 1942 recording of Flying Home, where Illinois Jackett's exemplar solo had budding musicians flying to pick up a saxophone. From Honker's Big J McNeely to Indianapolis's Jimmy Coe, sax was everywhere, and in 1952, jazz veteran Jimmy Forrest would nick a bit of former employer Duke Ellington's happy-go-lucky local and morph it into the sax classic Night Train. We'll be right back. With all due respect to the Harmonic Cats' 1947 hit, Peg of My Heart, the biggest harmonica instrumental of all time was Harp God Little Walter's Juke. Initially titled Your Cat Will Play, 1952's Juke put the mercurial Walter Jacobs onto a short-lived path to blues superstardom and popularized the now standard technique of utilizing a microphone to amplify and distort a harp sound. Foster, the father of American music, could not possibly have fathomed his old folks at home, better known as Swanee River, would be relevant after nearly 100 years as a boogie-woogie virtuoso piano showcase. But that's what Albert Ammons did in 1947 as Swanee River Boogie, and his protege, Fats Domino, would do with his 1953 revved-up variation titled Swanee River Hop. Thank you. Astonishing. That's the best commentary I can provide for Johnny Guitar Watson's 1954 Space Guitar. The Texas guitar singer had only recently switched from piano to guitar and was still in his teens, making the tune even more remarkable. With the clarity of hindsight, the song was a good dozen years ahead of its time. Bo Diddley was an accomplished violinist. I'm not kidding, and neither was Bo. It was his first love. Bo was also Chess Records' resident alchemist, obsessively searching for new rhythms and sounds. It was only a matter of time before his proclivity and his passion would meld together to produce something so unusual and hypnotic. You just have to hear it for yourself. 1958's The Clock Strikes 12. Sometimes an instrumental is not built upon gimmickry or instrument virtuosity, but on atmosphere. Such is the case in 1959 when a white teenage garage band from New Jersey recorded the definitive version of the venerable classic Harlem Nocturne. Their interpretation was sultry, greasy, menacing, pure noir. Ray Noble, Johnny Otis, nor Earl Bostic could do what the Viscounts did, make it a hit.
Rock and roll has got to go. And go it does at KWK. We're all through playing rock and roll records. This week is record-breaking week here at KWK. And after this week, no more rock and roll will be played on the air. This will give us the ability to program to the largest mass audience. Teenagers, adults, all will enjoy the new sound on KWK.
He wasn't a top-shelf studio drummer like Hal Blaine or Earl Palmer, and he wasn't the first with a hit drum instrumental, but Sandy Nelson was responsible for consistent drum-centric hit instrumentals. Beat to the Charts by Cozy Cole and technically Preston Epps. Sandy's first hit in 1959 established a rather unintentional proto-surf sound. With a shift to the Imperial label in 1961, Sandy pounded out another hit with the authoritatively titled Let There Be Drums.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning into this installment of the Rock and Rhythm Review. To learn a little more about instrumentals, find a copy of Steve Otfanowski's book, The Golden Age of Rock Instrumentals. My special thanks to Jim Walsh, PJ Kirkpatrick, and Frank Sinatra. If you know QWERTY, send your email to wmat@mail.com. Starting in the late 50s, he was one of Chicago's most prolific session guitarists and bassists. Yet, Phil Upchurch toiled in relative obscurity. But in 1961, he had a minor instrumental hit that surprisingly, 2 years later, grew lyrics and became a top 10 hit for the Duvels. Interestingly, though many cite John Entwistle as the first to do so, Phil Upchurch seems to have been the first to record an electric bass solo. Let's listen to Phil's You Can't Sit Down.